Welcome back, everyone. My name is Meg Krueger. I'm the content specialist with Pioneer. And today I am joined by Matt Williams, and we're going to dive into some tech talk. So we're going to be talking about grow lights and the innovative technology there. We're excited to dive right in. But before we get there, Matt, go ahead and introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about yourself.
Hi, Meg. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it. And today I'm Matt Williams. I'm a technical sales representative for SGL in North America. And I've worked for SGL for about 3 years, but I've been in the turf business for longer than I'd like to admit. I got my start in the late 90s doing some golf work, and went to Ohio State for turf grass science, and spent time in sports turf working for the Cincinnati Reds and the Columbus Crew. And then I spent over a decade working at Ohio State at their turf grass research facility on the Columbus campus, and had an opportunity to slide over into something that really interests me. And it's been a fun few years here with SGL. So
you have deep Ohio roots. You've seen it all. You've been everywhere across the state.
I got as far as to the Ohio River. I've never left. I've always lived in the state. I had a few opportunities to leave, but yes, I'm an Ohioan and a Buckeye through and through. So
love that. Yeah. And you know, how big of a role has that background really played into this new position? Do you think that, you know, obviously it's given you advantages, but how has it really helped you, you know, understand both sides of the business?
For sure. I think that's why, you know, why my experience is why I was interested in SGL, my experiences with sports and my network. And I think, you know, on the flip side, that's what, you know, made me as a attractive candidate for them is, you know, yeah, I've covered, worked in all aspects of turf, from golf to athletic fields to research. And it really was what they were trying to do. I was the first U.S. employee in this country, and SGL about 4 years ago started a U.S. division, you know, incorporated in Ohio, and they needed more than just sales. They needed somebody with the network and the agronomy knowledge. And, you know, I don't do any of those things really well, but I do all of them a little bit. And I think, it's been key, and it's been very helpful. And, you know, I spend a lot of time with MLS in the MLS and talking to those guys, and having been in those trenches, I think makes the conversations go a lot easier with those fellas. So, but.
Definitely. And, you know, it's such a technical field that, you know, I've been with Pioneer for 3 years and I don't even think I've scratched the surface. And to be able to talk the talk, I'm sure really aids in, you know, just gaining that trust with customers that you kind of know, you know, or you can at least guide them to the right decision.
Yeah. And I know what you mean. Like I said, this June will be 3 years with SGL, and I learn every day, but and really the pandemic made an opportunity when nobody was allowed in the country. We'd have two other reps that would come over here, you know, 5 or 6 times a year and to help with service or delivery of new equipment. And that went away for 19 or 20 months. I didn't see one of my colleagues. And so it gave me an opportunity to just grab a hold of our operations and do things that I hadn't done before, but it was very difficult for all of us, you know, it really allowed me to get integrated with SGL
empower you to really take charge over.
That's right. If anything positive came out of the last 2 years for me personally, that surely is.
Definitely. And so the home base for SGL is the Netherlands, like you said. So how long have they been kind of developing and working with this technology?
Yeah. So over 20 years, and it's actually a great story. Our managing director, Nico van Buren, he's a rose grower. He has, I don't know the number off the top of my head, but hectares upon hectares of indoor Rose Production. And so cool. And he also is a big football or soccer fan. And in the late 90s, you know, he's such an entrepreneur and a creative mind. It was very frustrating to him that he would go to a soccer match and the pitch was in very poor condition. Yeah. And he could see, you know, in Europe, they've long had these designs. They play in the winter, so they have stadiums that are designed with roofs to protect the fans. And he had just had this idea, or really what kicked it off is he didn't understand why the pitch was poor, and he had to mow the turf around all of his greenhouses all year long. And the entrepreneurial mind that Nico is, he put these together and he said, this is what we need to do. We need to bring lights out on the surface. And that was his vision. And he worked very hard and developed different ideas. And, you know, and now in Europe, it's a utility. It's as common as irrigation. And, with some of the new designs of stadiums in the US, it's surely becoming that way here too. When they build structures that block the sunlight and make it difficult, you know, for the grass to grow, the products we sell are becoming essential on sites. So
is that the main use case, is a stadium with a roof or a stadium that is hosting a ton of events and you need, you know, accelerated grow time? Is that when this technology is really being utilized?
Yeah. And I think there's two distinctions there. Is one, you have a venue where there's just reduced light, and like the structure or the stand or a scoreboard blocks sun from some or all the field for extended periods. And we measure light in some technical terms called moles. And we do some analysis, and we can go to the customer and analyze their stadium and based off of weather and the type of grass they're using and how it's oriented north to south. And we can show them where they're light deficient through certain times of the year and where they're not. But you also mentioned events, and that's the other thing, is the lights can be used to accelerate growth. And if you have a lot of events, or you have high wear areas, like on a soccer field, the goal mouth, the referee runs, corner kicks, things like that, the lights can be used to accelerate growth in those areas to recover, to grow seed faster in cooler times of the year, because the lights put off some heat. It's not just blocking light, but accelerated growth and quality surfaces, or like on a football field down the hash marks where there's a lot of aggressive play, and they can be used there to recover and have a safe playable surface.
So just off the top of your head, like, what percentage of the market in the United States are utilizing grow lights right now in sports turf?
Oh, as a percentage of the market, I'm not sure I can answer that, but we have approaching 50 customers in the U.S. From large scale, where, you know, there's where you can cover half of a soccer field at the same time, down to we have little small units we call a BU-10 that has two light fixtures in it that can be used at a high school. So on a goal mouth, it covers a goal mouth or a corner kick or a PK. So some of our product advancements over the last 2 years have allowed us, you know, there was a time when we sold very large lighting units and you were talking mainly to large stadiums. With large budgets, but that's not the case anymore. There's not a turf manager that we can't have a conversation with and possibly have a role with, from sport and grounds areas to golf. So and then all the way up to the large installs.
Very cool. Yeah, just in my frame of mind coming into this chat, like, I was thinking, oh, only stadiums with huge budgets would be interested in something like that. But that's awesome to hear that the technology is, you know, universally available to different scales of operations.
Yeah. Very cool.
And how, you know, let's just dive in a little bit to, like, how grow light technology is really helping reduce the effects of shade and just, like, promoting overall turf grass health?
Mm-hmm. Well, photosynthesis is the key to grass growth. And if you, now different species have different requirements. But if you are deficient in light, and there are lines that we can draw for cool season grasses, for warm season grasses, and it's much, I look at it like nutrition. And, you know, if you are, if either, you know, plant nutrition or human nutrition, if you are not getting in a plant situation the right amount of NPK and micronutrients, there's going to be a problem. And same with light, there's a deficiency level, and if you're below that, you'll be in decline and not at peak performance. So that allow we can go in there, and without the light, it's not going to perform well. And that's where we come in, is to bring those light levels into a sufficiency level, and then or target areas where there's aggressive wear, or they've had, you know, something that's caused unacceptable playing conditions, and to help it recover. So but it all starts with photosynthesis, and without it, that's how the plant makes its food, that's how it
fourth grade science class taking
that's
me
right
back.
That's right. Yeah.
So you kind of touched on it at the start of there, but, you know, what's the difference in how grow lights are affecting warm and cool season turf grasses?
Yeah. Well, the photosynthetic process is different for warm season and cool season. Mm-hmm. You'll hear them talk about C3, which are cool season grasses, and C4, which are warm season grasses. And it takes more energy to run the C4 or the warm season photosynthetic process. That's just it's like my pickup truck uses more gasoline than my wife's sedan. It takes more energy to do warm season. So you need, if it's a warm season grass, it needs more light, and it can handle more light. So sometimes with cool season grasses, we have to monitor how much light is going down, supplemental light, to not put down too much, because that threshold is a little bit lower. Where warm season grasses, you know, they're very light hungry, and they can take just about everything that we can provide them. So, it definitely, and we take that into account when we're talking with the customer and assessing their needs. We have all these charts, and one of those key things is it warm season grass, is it cool season grass, or is it a transitional surface where half the year you're growing ryegrass, which is a little bit different and different light requirements than during the summer, when it's going to be Bermuda or Prespalum, and your light requirements aren't supplemental light might not be as heavy because the sun's higher in the sky and stuff like that. So
really, what's like the barrier of entry for people that are just, you know, maybe they've just purchased a new unit and they want to get involved with this. How, like, what's that barrier of entry as far as like kind of mastering the grow lights? Is it something that it's like you just wheel it out onto the field and your job is done? Or what does that really look like?
Well, that's a very good question, because, this isn't, I compared, I think when we were talking earlier that, you know, in Europe, these have become a utility that are as common as irrigation, and irrigation runs themselves. You can even do it from home or on your phone or something like that. You have to physically deploy these lights, and you have to be aware of some of the surrounding conditions, like irrigation. These are waterproof. You can irrigate over top of them, but what we don't want you doing is blasting a high pressure, 60 PSI water into the side or up underneath where the bulb is at and stuff. So the customer has to be aware of that. They also have to be aware of use and of field use. So if you are at a lower level where you don't have as much control over when the field's being used, there's an investment in this. Is you don't want that thing sitting out in the goal mouth, and then the local under 40 team comes out to play and they hit it with a soccer ball or something like that. So there's some planning involved, but much like all agronomic activities, if you're doing cultivation or fertility or weed control, you don't get to go out and do that stuff 15 minutes before the teams come out. So they're like most of the things that groundskeepers do, you have to have some forward planning. So
Definitely. And, you know, we talk a lot about, you know, groundskeepers just like securing themselves a seat at the table, advocating for their expertise in a sense, and really how to navigate those conversations when it comes to purchasing equipment and how to frame, you know, this is going to get us this, this, and that. Is that a huge part of your gig, is kind of nurturing those conversations for them or giving them the resources to have those conversations?
Yeah, that's a very good question. And, you know, depending on the size, it can be a significant investment. And a lot of times, you know, there's a lot of lobbying to get those kind of projects. Mm-hmm. Some of our things are operating style investments. Some of them are capital or long-term planning. And what we try to do, it's like, you know, we work on a lot of new constructions and you sit down, and I remember a conversation when about security cameras at a building, and somebody came in and said, oh, you need 480 security cameras. And this project manager explained to us how they felt they could get away with 100 or something like that. Well, we want to go in and right size the project for the customer. And mm-hmm. that's where we call it a growth model and a climate and shade analysis. We collect data from the site. Again, I alluded to that earlier, but it has to do with what type of grass it is, what type of sport it is, how much play they envision, when they envision it, mm-hmm. How the venue is oriented north to south, because that has a big impact on when the sun hits there. And we take all that data, and our agronomy team does calculations and they prepare charts, and you can look at how light with this growth model, how light moves throughout the year from January, February, March, and overlay the weather and the temperature when you're going to be playing. And then that allows us to make recommendations to potential customers about this is what you need. And if you invest here, we can take we've done a lot of research. We have our own in-house research team in the Netherlands we call it pitch quality or field quality, and how you can take, if you can go from a target of, you know, if you have say 80% quality, and how we can take that to 90% quality. Awesome. And a lot of that's based on equipment. The more equipment you have, the more you can cover. And but it allows the customer to look at that and assess the investment, and maybe they decide to do it over 1 or 2 years because of an investment. And so mm-hmm. we want to right size our projects for the customers. And that's what I work on every day is explaining that. And that goes over very well, I think, with administration, the mm-hmm. people that scratch those checks. And so they can see that it's not just, oh, we want to put 5 or 6 or 9 of these units here. It's like, we recommend 5 because of your local conditions. So,
yeah. And I think there's such like, you know, there's that importance of making sure you're getting in front of those people long before you're asking for something like this, so that it's not alarming to them when you're like, oh, this is what we need to fix an issue. And they'll be like, oh, well, you know, we didn't know there was an issue in the first place, or what have you been doing wrong for the last 10 years that now there's an issue? And and how important it is to really keep them buying into that story, buying into those data points so much before you have an ask like this, that they know that, you know, this is not in response to a mistake that was made or something that was doing wrong, but really all the other cultural practices are going right, but this can elevate other elements of it.
Yeah. And many times, you know, like the demand on these surfaces is not getting less, it's getting more. Yeah. So what I did 20 years ago when I worked in MLS would not work today. First of all, the tools and the equipment and the products have changed. Mm-hmm. What a groundskeeper that's been at a club for say 6 or 8 years, what he did 6 or 8 years ago isn't going to work because of those same reasons. And because the demand for the surface is going up, they're doing concerts, they're doing high school matches before the league game. And so as those activities increase, you know, that has an impact. Every time, you know, a foot sits out on a field, it has an impact on the surface. And as that demand goes up there, mm-hmm. it requires additional tools to be successful, to reach the same amount of success that they had 5 years ago when the demand was lower. So
definitely. And as the groundskeeper's position evolves, you know, how do you see technology kind of evolving alongside that? And where do you see, you know, grow light technology in the next 2, 5, 10 years?
Yeah. Well, you mentioned technology, and what I've seen, particularly working on a lot of new constructions, is the fields of today are so much more technologically advanced. And there is not one answer. Grow lights help you, but you know, it starts with a competent, with an excellent grounds manager and a staff, and then they have an agronomic plan. And then from the construction, the kind of technology that's going in between undersoil heating and engineered root zones and vacuum assisted drainage and grow lights and covers and all those, you stack those technologies. So I'll never say there's one answer, but the technology that's going into the newly constructed athletic fields is impressive. So,
I think I always ask people when we do these podcasts, like, you know, if someone is just starting out or they just took on a new program and their director, like, what's the first thing they could do or what's the first thing they need to look at? And not a single person has ever had the same answer, which just reflects how diverse of a skill set a groundskeeper needs. Like it's no longer, you know, successful just to have 5 or 10 skills under your belt. You need to be business savvy. You need to be communication forward. You need to also have all the technical skills that, you know, a turf grass manager needs. It's just like, it's overwhelming sometimes to think about all the things that they need in order to be successful. So if technology can aid in that in any way and take some of the burden away, then, you know, obviously that's a win-win.
Yeah. And that's just in construction. There's so many opportunities now to do things remotely. I think we were talking about irrigation earlier before the meeting, and you know, when I was growing grass for a living, like I had to be on site, and if I left and I forgot to turn the irrigation on, now there's opportunities that can make that there's technology that can make decisions like that easier for the customer, or not for the grounds managers. Like, you know, I can cut out of here at 4:30 and I can set up irrigation and go to my kids' soccer match, and I can set up irrigation from my iPad later tonight. And that's taking a burden off. And, you know, it's difficult being managing something, a living, you know, turf grass plant. And if you make a poor decision on irrigation or the wrong decision, like it can affect the quality, and be able to do those things and not, and get away from the office and be able to do it. Those kind of technologies have made guys' jobs easier, guys and gals' jobs easier.
Yeah. That was like my next question is like, you know, someone that would be reluctant to adopting technology, like what would you say to them? But that's the perfect answer. Like the fact that you can, you know, you don't need to stay at the stadium till 10 p.m. waiting for a rainstorm to see it, you know, if it's going to come through. You can go home, and when it doesn't happen, turn on the irrigation for a few hours, like, and just to be able to, buy yourself more time, more freedom, and, you know, empower yourself to kind of utilize the tools that are available for sure. Well, so cool. Is there anything else I didn't touch on that you'd want to make sure is included in there?
I don't think so. No, I appreciate the time, and I like talking turf. I'm a turf dork at heart. I've spent my, you know, I was just talking with my wife the other day. It's like, it just hit me that I've been doing this for 25 years now. It's my 25th season involved in the turf industry. And I love the people and the industry, and it's just been, and to be able to talk about what I do, and I love what I do. So it's nice to talk about it. So I appreciate the opportunity, Meg. So.
Of course. And I can reiterate everything you said. I mean, to be in this industry is so exciting. And because, you know, I, as a journalist, I've, you know, really talked to so many different people in so many different avenues of life. And I've never met people so passionate about, you know, what they're doing. And in turn, that just inspires me to, you know, have these kind of cool conversations. So, I can't imagine ever leaving the turf industry. It's too good to leave. Yeah. So awesome. I really appreciate your time. And, you know, everyone keep your eyes peeled for more groundskeeper chats like this one. And of course, new tech updates and innovative practices that are going to be hitting the market. So Matt, thank you again. And we hope you have a great rest of your day.
Thank you. Appreciate it.